1490 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. 40 million Americans on alert for severe weather. Comes as Missouri recovers from early morning tornadoes. Sergeant Clark Parrott with the Missouri State Highway Patrol.
After the debris and the noise stopped, I went outside and half of the building roof was ripped out and people came out in confusion and then pipes were busted and it was a mess.
Those tornadoes killed 5 people and injured 5 others in Missouri. The Justice Department filing charges against the sheriff of Frederick County, Maryland. Sheriff spokesman Todd Weibel says Charles Austin Jenkins has no plans to resign.
He's been fully cooperative with the DOJ and the ATF the entire time. We had no knowledge that this was happening.
Sheriff Jenkins charged with allegedly conspiring with a local gun range owner and making false statements in order to acquire machine guns. Victims of the 2017 Sutherland Springs church mass shooting reaching a tentative $144 million settlement with the Justice Department. This is ABC News. Chicago firefighter hurt while battling a high-rise blaze on the city's north side has died. 3 others were hurt. Celebrating a different Good Friday.
President Biden will travel to Belfast, Northern Ireland next week to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Peace Agreement, which helped end decades of conflict and violence there. The president will then spend several days in Ireland, visiting County Louth, Dublin, and County Mayo, where the White House says he'll hold engagements focused on the close cooperation between the U.S. and Ireland on global challenges and the deep historic ties between the two countries and people. The president proudly talks about his Irish heritage, often sprinkles quotes from his favorite Irish poets into his speeches, and speaks fondly about his visit to Ireland in 2016. Karen Travers, ABC News, Washington.
New research finds about 40% of patients who experience so-called long COVID have moderate to severe sleep issues. Number based on patients treated at Cleveland Clinic. Researchers also say black patients were 3 times more likely to develop sleep disturbances. Andy Field, ABC News.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT. G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for greatest of all time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Dan Kelly is going down swinging even after losing the Wisconsin Supreme Court race by a wide margin. In an unusual concession speech, he called Janet Protasiewicz a serial liar.
I wish that in a circumstance like this, I would be able to concede to a worthy opponent. But I do not have a worthy opponent to which I can concede.
Wisconsin's high court will have a liberal majority for the first time in 15 years. The mayors of Madison, Green Bay, and Racine all won re-election. Voters in Mount Pleasant re-elected all of their village board members in what amounted to a referendum on embattled manufacturer Foxconn. In sports, the Bucks beat Washington last night. The Brewers and Mets play today. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Changing room. Here's the other part. Well, wait a second. Don't we already have the already on the book? Yes, they are. And this is the crazy part. Hold it. Now, Arkansas, one of the poverty rates, all. But this again, things we need to be doing to help working people. Rebuilding, investing, legislatures and our federal government could, should, and must be doing, because we're so under the dress. And again, I don't care what's on. I don't care. Put your freak on the be. Don't care. Don't care. How are we going to take care of our families? Other people decide how they're going to take care of theirs. I don't think that's radical. In fact, I think it's conservative. Heaven forbid, limited government, not telling people what to do, staying out of people's lives, allowing people to pursue their destiny and their liberty? Heaven forbid. Hope that answers your question, Darren. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2010. That was the day an explosion in the Upper Big Branch mine killed 29 miners. This is the second of two parts commemorating that disastrous moment in labor history. The accumulation of explosive methane gas was so pronounced that the mine had to be evacuated several times leading up to the disaster. A 126-page Governor's Independent Investigation Panel report detailed the systemic failures of safety systems and at governmental agencies charged with enforcing regulation. Lack of proper ventilation, adherence to rock dusting standards, and proper maintenance of machinery were main factors. The panel also held the Mine Safety and Health Administration responsible for disregarding the documented risk of methane outbursts at the mine, overlooking the deadly potential of a precarious ventilation system, neglecting to use its regulatory authority to force technological improvements, and allowing the U.S. mine safety system to atrophy. They determined that MSHA could have issued flagrant violation citations and had the authority to shut the mines down, but didn't. The report noted the cozy relations between mine owners, politicians, judges, and regulators. Specifically, the ease with which state mine officials move from employment with industry to government and back. Despised union-busting CEO Don Blankenship, who was tried and convicted to 1 year in jail, insisted his mines were safe. He cited three Sentinels of Safety awards received from MSHA in 2009. These awards went to surface mining and coal processing plant operations. Blankenship even blamed MSHA for the explosion because the agency demanded changes in UBB's ventilation system. A union safety committee could have shut the mine down before methane gas and coal dust combined to cause the explosion. If only there had been a union.
With new outrages erupting every day, I find some comfort in knowing that we the people have at least eliminated certain particularly ugly plutocratic abuses. Child labor, for example. Well, outlawed, yes. Stopped, no. Recent reports reveal that thousands of children ages 12 to 17 are toiling illegally at dangerous jobs in manufacturing, construction, food processing, etc. To be clear, there's nothing wrong with teenagers working. They might need to help their families, gain experience, or just earn a few bucks. Indeed, I worked part-time throughout my high school and college years, and while I did gripe some, overall, it was positive. So this is not about children working. It's about corporate child abuse, plain and simple. For example, last year, Packer Sanitation Services was caught quote, employing oppressive child labor in meatpacking plants to clean saws, head splitters, and other butchering machines. In a typical incident, one 13-year-old was badly burned by the caustic cleaning chemicals they used during long night shifts, which ran from 11 p.m. to at least 5 a.m. Once caught, top executives of Packers Sanitation tried to sanitize their reputation by proclaiming that they have, quote, zero tolerance for any violation of child labor laws. Oh? Ask that 13-year-old. Yet, our worker protection laws are so weak that Packers' multiple violations resulted in a fine of $1.5 million. That's not even peanuts for this nationwide giant, which is owned by Blackstone, a Wall Street huckster whose executives pretend they know nothing about the children they endanger for profit. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about we make a few of the children and grandchildren of Blackstone profiteers work some midnight shifts cleaning meat-cutting machinery? I'm guessing they would stop the abuse overnight.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, it looks like if the case doesn't get thrown out against Trump, which I'm not sure, I don't know, we'll see. Maybe my next guest has got some thoughts on it, but we do know December 4th is the next court date in Manhattan, and possibly the judge, I guess, set trial date for sometime in January, right in time for the February Iowa caucus. So, interesting dates lining up. Something to mark the calendar over. But here to share some thoughts on the validity of this case. Does it go anywhere? Did we get him? Has he been gotten? That's why I've asked Christopher Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host and the host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can also check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So has he been gotten? Is he gotten?
Not gotten, but I don't think this helps him. I mean, I think this ends after a series of appeals in 2020, him paying like $150,000 fine or something stupid like that. He clearly did what he's being accused of, and he did it for political purposes. And it's funny, his miserly ways is what in the end will get him, because he said to Michael Cohen, hold off paying her until after the election, because if I lose, it won't matter. Right. So that's clear. That's, to me, if that could be corroborated, because I wouldn't just hang my hat on Michael Cohen. But if that could be corroborated by somebody else.
Yeah. If there's a tape, you know, maybe
he's gone. I mean, he loses this case. It's intent. It's clear intent. The intent is the part that's hard to. There is no debating whether or not he made a payment to Stormy Daniels. There's no debating whether or not Michael Cohen paid him back. There's checks, there's receipts. But did he do this for political purposes? Yes, he did, based on that statement. So he's guilty of this, and he will lose. He won't spend a second in jail. He will be fined. He will appeal the fine, because he keeps asking people who can't afford to give him $5 a week to give him $5 a week, and they will fund his legal defense. And even though this is a case that he could settle probably tomorrow for a $200,000 fine, he will settle it. He will be convicted of it, and he will appeal it to the New York State Court of Appeals, where he will lose, and he will be forced to pay a $150,000 fine.
So you don't see this, as some have said, no, this is going to go in front of the Supreme Court, and they're going to throw this out. You know, you don't see any
Why
of that.
Why would it go in front of the Supreme Court? It's a state charge, right?
But the technical.
So I get that there's like a federal connection, because it's a federal election, but he did violate New York state law as well, and he's going to get convicted on that. And I think the underlying crime, which was not charged yet, and it might still yet be charged, is a tax fraud crime. Because he may have taken a tax deduction for his payments to Michael Cohen, because he's cheap, right? If the guy just was handing out the money and said, who cares? This wouldn't even be happening.
See, this is where I said from the beginning, how is it he doesn't have bags of, you know, he does the Mafia Don thing. How is it he doesn't have lunch bags full of cash for just these kind of occasions?
It's funny, because he says, well, pay her in cash. And Michael Cohen says, no, 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 no. I don't get that part. I don't trust Michael Cohen. I don't know if you've ever talked to him.
No.
I don't trust the guy.
And that's why I don't think he gets convicted, because I don't trust Michael
Cohen.
Well,
I don't think anybody does. And I think that's why the original decision by Bragg was to not bring this case.
Right.
They must have more. And I would bet it's Alan Weiselberg, who changed lawyers a couple of weeks ago. And when people change lawyers, it usually means they've changed loyalty.
Right.
Donald Trump mentioned him very positively in his speech last night. It was like the only positive thing he said was about Alan Weiselberg. But I don't know. I think that he might have flipped. We'll find out.
We'll see, because my concern here is that you swing for the first one and you miss, it diminishes all the other ones. And I know you'll probably disagree with this, but you know, if you're going to go for the guy at the top of the hill, you don't miss. Because I fear it does then make him look like the martyr that the right is trying to make him out to be.
Look, every day that Donald Trump has to talk about how he paid off a porn star and that it was okay to do anything illegal and he's paying off a porn star, that loses him a vote.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, look, Democrats don't have to appeal to the religious right. And I don't believe all of them believe in family values and good morality, but some of them do. Some of them that matters on too. And you don't have to lose all of them. You only got to lose some of them, and not even a lot of them, really 1-3%. You're done.
Yeah.
And I think he's already lost them and he's not getting them back. How does this help him get back the voters he lost in Wisconsin, in Arizona, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania? It doesn't help him. I'm sorry.
No, not there. It doesn't.
Care.
You're right.
I don't care what anybody says about the short-term benefits of this for Donald Trump. He is unelectable at this point. Now, the Republicans are going to nominate him because the people who are running against him are weak. They are minor league ball players, and Donald Trump is a major league ball player, right? These are minor league A-ball, okay? Ron DeSantis is in the single A league. He is not even in the triple A, in my opinion. I know that there's this love affair because the liberal media in this country wants to find a Republican that's normal. Ron DeSantis is not normal, and he's not a good politician. Yeah. And he's not even that smart for a guy who went to Harvard and Yale. Okay? He is a dolt.
Now, this is what I've been saying for a while, though. There aren't those Republicans that people are looking for. They're not there anymore. They've been purged.
Ron DeSantis is about to sign basically a total abortion ban, which may make him unelectable in Florida in 3 years. I'll be honest with you. The issue in these elections, like the election that happened in Wisconsin last night, it wasn't about Donald Trump. It was about choice. It was about a woman's right to choose, and the extremism of the Republican Party on that issue and other issues involving the human body, quite frankly. And it's, you know, Ron DeSantis is, again, following the Trump playbook of just appealing to that nonsense. But again, I just find it hard to believe that what Donald Trump is going through helps him long term. You know, Republicans are going to fall in line behind him. They have no choice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But he's dead, in my opinion, politically.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're Chris Hahn. Chris is a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find Chris's. Also, check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. So, you know, this aside, you know, I guess over the summer it's being predicted, nobody knows, that Georgia may come around, that you know, maybe Merrick Garland's going to find it set. Those are the serious ones. That perfect phone call into Georgia going, hey, check the couch cushion, I need some votes. That's a big one to me. And the classified documents thing is huge. Because even to this day, he is still saying he's got the right to do it.
This is the first. This is, I've been saying, give you a little palate cleanser. This is the palate cleanser. This is the fun. He is going Biden in Georgia, and I don't think it's going to be this summer. I think it's going to be soon. I thought it could be this week. She's sitting on these indictments. They just impaneled a brand new grand jury in Atlanta. I don't know if this case is going before them or not, but the first week of the month is when they impanel new grand juries there. So he's going to be the subject of a grand jury, and he's going to be indicted there. Rick Smith, not Rick Smith, Jack Smith. You're Rick Smith.
Yeah, that's me.
Your cousin, Jack, is bringing a charge. Look, Mike Pence just said today he's going to testify. All right, I lost in court. I'm not going to appeal it. He wanted to go. Okay, he's going. Now the devil made him do it. He can go. He's not going to make the devil wait. He's not going to make other devils make him do it. He's just going to go do it. That's coming. Now, I don't know if Merrick Garland's going to bring it. Jack Smith is going to get the goods. Merrick Garland's got to grow a pair, and he's got to bring it. And if he doesn't, he's going to hear from guys like you and I a lot.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give him a pass. I'm sorry. I don't think being president should excuse you from being prosecuted. And I think it should be kind of like, you know, like a celebrity who gets a speeding ticket. We should make an example of you for breaking these laws. I mean, Aunt Becky went to jail because she gave a college, you know, $100,000, pretended her daughter was a rower to help her get into USC. And the kid didn't even want to go to college. She didn't need to. She had a $2 million a year business. I wouldn't have gone. You know, it's. You know, they made an example out of her. Anybody else that happened to? Well, a little fine. Slap on the wrist. See you later.
Now, this because this is the
important part. Becky went to jail. She went to jail.
Yeah, she did. And this is the important part of this because, you know, I've been screaming for years. We don't hold presidents accountable for the things that they do. We haven't done it.
Right.
We didn't do it to Reagan. Didn't do it to Bush.
Didn't do it to Clinton. We didn't do it to Clinton.
Didn't do it to any
of them. And by the way, Clinton pled guilty. He pled guilty while he was president. I mean, granted, it was the last 24 hours of his presidency, but he pled guilty to avoid charges. And he was disbarred for 5 years and had other things around it when he pled guilty to lying under oath.
Yep. No, and look, yeah, I was saying back then, he shouldn't have been asked the question. It shouldn't have been, I don't care. But the second he was asked under oath, you got to tell the truth.
That's the law.
Is this that moment where we start doing this in the future, or is this a one-off? Because I've got my conservative friends who are saying, this is just the persecution of Donald Trump. We wouldn't do this to anybody else but poor, poor Donald.
Yeah, look, I've been hearing that. If a president breaks the law, they should be prosecuted. Period. We are a nation of men, of law, not laws, not men. And do we believe that or not? And I believe that.
Yeah.
And I believe that he should be prosecuted. And there should be look, first of all, the man led an insurrection against the United States of America. He did it. Him and his people. And they should have been prosecuted for that immediately.
Immediately.
Like, I don't know why this is still dragging out on that end. And it should be done. It should have been done then. He should have been convicted by the Senate. He was the first president in the history of this country to have that many members of his own party vote to convict. He should have been removed or convicted at that point because he was already out of office.
Last question on this I want to get from you. There's talk that the judge may issue a gag order. If you're the prosecution, do you fight that gag order? Because I do.
If I'm the Democratic National Committee, I fight the gag order.
I fight the gag order.
I mean, look, he goes on stage at Mar-a-Lago last night after being told by the judge to watch what you say, don't incite violence. He calls out the judge's daughter and the judge's wife and the prosecutor. I'm sorry. If you or I did that, we'd be in jail right now.
I
agree. They would have locked us up till trial. He is.
Yeah, we lost you.
Hold on.
You're back.
Yeah, it's my. I got to get a new USB cord for this mic. But he cannot be above the law.
Yeah.
No.
I want to get your thoughts on Wisconsin. You know, a big win on the Supreme Court side, but the state Senate seat that's going to give them now supermajority status, does one offset the other? Because the guy, this is where my mind has been. You know, okay, we won the Supreme Court seat, but you know they can go and yank her out of there. Thoughts?
I mean, are they going to yank her out of there? Then Tony Evers gets to appoint the replacement independently without confirmation.
Right.
So they can yank her if they want, if they think that helps, yank her. I don't think the voters of Wisconsin with the new maps that are going to be drawn because they're going to lose the gerrymander case are going to be too happy about that. The woman won by 10 points. This was not a close race, right? This was a clear victory in a 50-50 state. And they could try if they want. I guess that was the guy that was running. That's what he said while he was running. I don't know that I'm hearing that from the leadership in the Republican Party in Wisconsin State Senate. And I don't know, do they have a veto-proof majority in the legislature? You might be more too in the assembly side or the House, whatever they call it there.
I guess they only have to do it in the Senate. To remove a state official, it only has to be in the Senate, as I understand.
So, yeah, you know, look, my advice to them is you do what you think is right, and we'll see how that works out for you.
Yeah,
he can appoint anybody he wants the next minute. The minute she's gone, without any confirmation from the Senate, he gets to appoint. That's my understanding of the law in Wisconsin. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think I am.
Yeah, I think you're right as well. But last question I've got. So I want to confirm the prediction here. Never going to spend a day in jail.
Never. For any of this.
Okay, so we agree.
For anything he did, he's never going to have any real consequences, but he will be convicted of something.
Does he take a plea? At any point, will he take a plea?
You know, if I was him, I would. Particularly in the stuff Jack Smith's going to bring. Because the Jack Smith stuff is serious stuff, especially if there's some nuclear secret that he was mishandling at Mar-a-Lago. Maybe he takes a plea so that the people don't even know about that. But I think he should.
Yeah, I see no world that he does.
It kills the grift if he does, because, you know, he's on the phone. He's in your email. Begging you for money every day.
All day.
Because, you know, all rich people need your $5.
Yeah.
All billionaires need $5 from people who work for a living.
Guys, he's got his name on the side of a plane. He needs your $5.
Yep.
That's a lot of gas money.
Yeah. You know, what do you think? That plane flies itself?
Yeah, well, we'll see. But, Chris, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts and expertise. Good stuff.
Anytime, brother.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, our good friend, Chris Hahn. Make sure you check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. We'll get links out on social media. Also, make sure you check out his podcast, The Aggressive Progressive Podcast, back after this. Stick around.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that the United Mine Workers of America called for a strike against the Pittston Coal Company. Negotiation with the miners who worked in Virginia, West Virginia, and Kentucky had dragged on for 14 months. The company had canceled health care for retired miners, along with miners with disabilities and widows, and also was not paying previously agreed to payments into a retiree benefit fund. 2,000 miners walked out of the mines and onto the picket lines. The company brought in replacement workers. The union was committed to peaceful protest, but the strike also drew a large number of other miners to the cause who supported the strike in wildcat actions. As many as 40,000 wildcat miners walked the lines in support of the strike. Angered over the use of scab labor, some of these picketers participated in actions like using jack rocks, a line of nails welded together to puncture the tires of company vehicles. In all, 4,000 people were arrested during the strike. The strike stretched on from days to weeks to months. At the time of the strike, current AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka was president of the United Mine Workers. When a newspaper reporter asked him how long the workers could hold out on the strike, he responded, "One day longer than Pittston." Many friends from labor came to Appalachia to support the strike, including famed farm labor activist Cesar Chavez. A nearby campground became known as Camp Solidarity as a base for these friends. Women supporters formed a group called the Daughters of Mother Jones and staged support actions, including a 36-hour sit-in at the Pittston Coal headquarters. The strike ended in February of 1990, with the miners winning some, but not all, of their demands.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Marianne from Minnesota, listening on KTNF 950 AM in Minneapolis, St. Paul, asks, what's the alternative for the GOP to Donald Trump? She asks, do I see any of them as capable of defeating Trump? And the answer is no. I don't see any of the Republicans capable of beating Trump in the primary. I just don't. This is where I differ maybe a little with Chris and some other people. I think that, you know, no matter what comes out of these trials between now and the primary, I don't think the rabid base, the fives, the people who are wearing the hats still, the people who are still flying the flags from their cars and their houses, wearing the T-shirts, still those people, no matter what comes out, never going to change. And I think they're a large enough block that it doesn't matter who the Republicans put forth, that's going to be the guy. Now, you know, who could be? I don't see anyone. You know, I was looking at some of the top names. You know, they're throwing this Vivek Ramaswamy guy out. A rich guy, you know, young rich guy, good looking rich guy who's got a good line. I don't see him as having a chance. I look at Asa Hutchinson. Nobody knows who he is. DeSantis, I just think is a bad, as Chris said, I think he's just a bad politician. He plays the tough guy. And that shtick only gets you so far. And you know, look, this abortion thing, gonna hurt him. Mike Pence, really? No, Mike Pence. Maybe his wife, maybe mother. Maybe if mother ran, she might have a shot. But I don't think Mike Pence. I don't think Mike Pompeo. I know some friends who think he's the sleeper. I don't think Chris Sununu is gonna be the guy. Tim Scott's an interesting possibility. I doubt it. He's got good name recognition. I don't know. Everyone that I know keeps pointing to Nikki Haley, who evidently raised $11 million in the first several weeks of her campaign. Which you go, $11 million. Let's see. That's only 989 million short of what she's going to need. But, you know, she's got, you know, people donating to her. And helping early on. Do I think she's going to be the nominee? No, I don't think so. Because, look, the party is split, especially on what's going on in Ukraine. She seems to be one of the ones who has something of a sane position on it. But, you know, half the party's, you know, I got to say, half the party's in Putin's pocket, it appears. You know, these people who are saying, well, we need to be isolationist, we need to do nothing, you know, let Ukraine fall. I'm not there. I'm of the mindset, and this is where I go back to, I'm a Teddy Roosevelt kind of guy. Yeah, you walk softly, carry a big stick. I want our military to be big, strong. I want us to be the biggest, boldest, baddest on the planet, because I trust us more than anybody else. And that's not a lot. Let's not get carried away. But if you could have told me, you know, back in the 80s, you could basically bring the Russian military to its knees for a couple hundred billion dollars, do you think we would have done it? Do you think Reagan would have done it? He would have done it in a heartbeat. And this is where I'm in this weird kind of spot where you go, so by supporting the Ukrainians to do the things that we claim we believe in, fighting for democracy and fighting for freedom and, you know, all this stuff from a Russian dictator. I'm struggling with this because I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth, that we have elected officials, people in Congress who are siding with the Russians in this. Look, I remember the 1980, you know, hockey team. I remember the national pride that came with beating the Soviet Union in hockey. And look, my mind is still in that same place. I'm still distrustful of the guy who was the head of the KGB. I'm still distrustful of the guy who I believe wants to get the old band back together, and going through Ukraine to start is a good way to get it all back. So for me, and look, I'm not a war guy. Wasn't for going into Iraq, wasn't for Afghanistan either. So, you know what, go get bin Laden, go do what you got to do. But, You know, you don't go into Afghanistan. You learn nothing from history. I am not a war guy. I'm not a pacifist. Now, I've had people accuse me of that, but I'm not a war guy. I'm the Teddy Roosevelt type. Walk softly, carry the big stick, and when you need it, I'm of the Schwarzkopf mind, overwhelming force. The Powell Doctrine, if you will. They hit you with a feather, you hit them with a brick. Make it short, make it quick. But we didn't really do that. And yeah, I'm with some of them. That war does make rich people richer and poor people dead. I agree. Smedley Butler was spot on. But these aren't our people. We're simply giving people the opportunity to defend themselves. And that I'm all in favor of. So is there a Republican that can beat Trump? My short answer is absolutely not. Will he get defeated in the primary? I highly doubt it. I'm not a betting person. But if I were, I'd be betting on Trump to win the primary. Now, in the general, I don't think he has a chance to win in the general, especially as more comes out and more information about all of these different things, and he's fighting battles from every front. I think it's going to be a really heavy lift. And he doesn't have that surprise of, hey, I've got this. I'm going to rebuild stuff. He's got a track record. He's going to have to run on a record. And that record is simple. Cut taxes for the very wealthy, and deregulated a lot for corporate America. That's his record. Did he help working people? Did he help all the communities that we went through in our work?
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.